Thanks for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. America's infrastructure deficit is in excess of $2.3 trillion and growing. But resistance to raising taxes is stronger than ever, and federal funding is drying up. Here to talk about America's failing infrastructure and the impact on our economy and our global competitiveness, Tyler Duvall from McKinsey & Associates, Maureen McAvey of the Urban Land Council, Jack Basso of the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials, and former Governor Ed Rendell. He's co-chair of Building America's Future. He joins us on the line from New York. We'll take your calls throughout the hour, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Send us your Facebook and Twitter postings. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
And Governor Rendell, if I could start with you, I know that you co-chair Building America's Future. There's a new report out this morning that really paints a grim picture of the country's infrastructure. Give us an overall picture of what it looks like.
Well, our report, which was financed by the Rockefeller Foundation, is an exhaustive report looking at the American infrastructure, and it's called Falling Apart and Falling Behind. And it has three parts. Number one, it demonstrates how we're falling apart, what the infrastructure gap is. But that's not news to anybody, Diane. The American Society of Civil Engineers, ASHTO, many organizations have outlined exactly how far we're falling behind. And you're right, we have at least a $2.3 trillion gap. Secondly, we talk about falling behind, that we're falling behind our competitor nations, the nations that are competing with us for economic viability. And you look at the EU, Canada, Australia, China, Brazil, India, France, England, and Germany and Japan, and they've either completed recently a multi-year infrastructure revitalization program or they're in the midst of it. Even in this tough economic time for the world, many countries, the UK, Australia, Canada, have launched infrastructure repair programs. And, of course, the Chinese are spending almost 10% of their GDP on their transportation infrastructure and maintenance. It's incredible how far we are falling behind, whether it's high-speed rail or the condition of our roads or airports, rail, you name it. The World Economic Forum ranked the American infrastructure first in the world in 2005. Now, 6 years later, we're 15th in the world. In rail infrastructure, we're 18th in the world. Mm. In port infrastructure, 22nd in the world. And in air transport infrastructure, we're 32nd in the world, behind countries like Panama, Malaysia, and Chile. So that's the second part of the report. And the third part of the report is recommendations. And we recommend that we start looking at infrastructure, not just transportation, in a whole different way. First, we have to have a long-term strategic vision. And Building America's Future recommends a 10-year infrastructure revitalization program that spends $200 billion more a year on infrastructure. So $2 trillion of spending above and beyond what we're spending now in the next 10 years. Secondly, that we do it in a way that promotes accountability and innovation. And decisions are made not based on politics, but based on what's good for the economy, based on cost-benefit analysis. And thirdly, that we promote innovation in all aspects of how we do it. And fourth and last, that we look at all funding options. So, for example, it's time to unlock the bar, the federal bar, on tolling work that's done on federal highways. The state should be allowed to toll those highways and use that money for not only repairing those highways, but for helping their other infrastructure. three P's, public-private partnerships. We've got to pass laws to make it easier for the private sector that we estimate is waiting with about $200 to $300 billion to invest in the American infrastructure, that they can so do that. And a national infrastructure bank is the key to that, and we recommend that as well. Right. So we analyze the problems. We compare where we are competitively to our economic competitors, and we propose a real solution. We've got to do infrastructure revitalization. We've got to do it properly so there's public confidence, and we've got to do it at the right scale.
All right. And I think what I, and I'm sure many of our listeners, want to know, why is it so bad? Why have we gotten to this point?
Simply because we've been unwilling to invest, unwilling to do what our grandfathers and grandmothers did 50 years ago. We haven't had a strategic infrastructure vision for this country since Dwight David Eisenhower did the Interstate Highway Plan. We have let infrastructure spending go down each and every year. When Ike left office, we were spending 12% of our non-military domestic spending on infrastructure. Today, we spend less than 2.5% on infrastructure. And it's gotten that way in part because we've neglected it, and in part because of this mania that exists that we cannot spend money on anything, even when it's investing in something that's going to save us money in the long run. You all saw the American Society of Civil Engineers report that says our deteriorating infrastructure costs the American family over $1,000 a year out of their pockets. And the longer we delay, the higher the infrastructure repair bill is going to go. And so we can do this. And, Diane, now's the time to do it because the economy, everyone agrees, needs a shot in the arm. This is the best job producer of anything America can do. Every analyst says that for $1 billion of infrastructure spending, we create 25,000 new jobs on the construction sites, back in the factories that produce the steel and the concrete and the aggregate and all the materials that are used. We can, if we spend $200 billion more a year, produce 5 million well-paying jobs and each year for the next 10.
And, Governor, you know as well as I that the news this morning is that Standard & Poor's has downgraded America's standing from a AAA to a 2+. And the question is, in this kind of environment, what do you really expect the Congress to do, especially because S&P focused on the inability of the Congress to get anything done?
Well, what we're hoping is that this report by Building America's Future will be a wake-up call to the Congress. Yes, we can do meaningful deficit reduction, and we ought to be doing it at the $4-4.5 trillion range, and that means everything's on the table. But at the same time, every economist agrees we've got to invest in things that will keep us economically competitive in the long run and create jobs in the short run, and that's exactly what this will do. And by the way, when I say $200 billion more a year, that's not $200 billion from the federal treasury. That's money that's going to come from the private sector. That's money that we can take by repatriating all that foreign income that's abroad and that they owe taxes on at a lower rate. We can take some of that. It's building America's bonds. It's tolling. It's increasing the TIFIA program, things that cost us very little. The average yearly cost to the federal government would be less than $36 billion a year in this plan. And about $18 billion of that would come back and increase taxes. Taxes by the 5 million people who are working, taxes by the companies who will be making more money. And interesting, let me close. I know you want to talk to some of your other guests, Diane. But in 2008, the CBO issued a report saying issues and options in infrastructure investment. And I want to quote from the report that direct, properly targeted government spending of $185 billion a year on infrastructure would generate an economic and social benefit that would far exceed the cost.
All
Bingo.
Right.
That's the conservative CBO.
And you've been listening to the voice of former Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell. He is now the co-chair of Building America's Future. Turning to you,
along
Jeff,
with the great mayor of New York, Mike Bloomberg.
Half a century since the interstate system was built, and of course that was our last big strategic plan on a national scale. Has the appetite for this kind of program simply diminished?
Well, let me, Diane, just comment on that. I think what's happened is the interstate system was very focused. It was a map. It showed every part of this country what they were going to get and where it was going to go, and the effects thereof was very powerful. As that system wound down, the situation changed in that we really didn't reset a direction. I know Governor Rendell's report talks about that, and many others do too, but we need to reset a strategic direction. And I think we need to also be able to relate, like that map did, to state and local and voters in those areas as to explicitly what they will receive in terms of benefits and changes in their areas.
Is it a problem of the so-called earmarks, the so-called pork that many in Congress want to move away from, that they no longer believe that these bridges should be repaired in certain communities because somehow that represents pork?
Yes, I would say the pork issue, particularly the last transportation bill, became a public relations nightmare. I remember seeing on the cover of Parade magazine this issue and really recognizing that we need to change that dynamic because that's not really the reality of what's going on.
So. Jack Mazzo, he's director of the Program and Finance Management for the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials. We'll talk with our other guests when we come back. And joining us now is Florida Republican Congressman John Mica. He's chair of the House Transportation Committee. Good morning to you, sir.
Well, good morning. Good to be with you.
Thank you. Congressman Mica, why in this era of real need for infrastructure repair are you proposing to reduce government spending on that very infrastructure?
Well, actually, what we're proposing in the House is to basically live within the means of the trust fund. People pay 18.4 cents per gallon or whatever their fuel tax is, and the fees go into a trust fund. We get in about $35 billion a year. And we propose to spend within the means and the amount of money that we have. But what we're basing our expenditure on is actually looking at how we can take that money and better utilize it and then also actually get money out.
When you say better utilize it, what do you mean?
Well, again, okay, I'm handed the cards that the House rules say we have to live within our means and also the budget. So that gives me $35 billion. What can I do with that $35 billion? Well, two things. First thing, I can spend it wisely and use the financing tools that I have available, some creative financing. We take programs that work well, make them work better. We take programs that don't work and make them work. So I can turn my $35 billion a year into $70 billion. Then the second part of what we're looking to do is to streamline the process, even with the $63 billion that was given for infrastructure out of a $787 billion stimulus bill. The $63 billion, as of a few months ago, had $39 billion still in the federal treasury. So I need to streamline the process of getting money out.
You have probably heard former Governor Ed Rendell earlier say that what is needed is at least an investment of $200 billion a year in both government and private funding in order to try to begin bringing our infrastructure back to par. We have dropped from first on the list internationally now to 15th. Does that concern you?
I think it does concern me. We are falling. Ed is right. He's a great advocate for transportation nationally. When he was governor, he even tried some of the things that we're looking at doing, and that's take some of the assets. Sometimes I say in both some of the reports we've done and also to get people's attention, I say you have to stop sitting on your assets. But he was proposed to take part of his interstate, toll it, and then use the revenues to expand, again, programs, both transit and highways. We're looking at the same thing, although I don't favor tolling any existing free lanes. But we can take the right-of-way and the other asset, define how you can use it, and then also create good financing tools to attract private sector dollars. So we can get close to that figure that Ed Rendell's talking about.
I wonder whether, in fact, the lack of investment could hurt the economy more than extra borrowing would.
It's hurt the economy. The Democrats proposed a $787 billion stimulus bill. Everybody thought that was going to be infrastructure. It turned out less than 7%, $63 billion was infrastructure. And as I said, we did a hearing 2 months ago, and 39% of the money was still sitting in the federal treasury. So not only do I have to obtain better ways to leverage the money that we have, but I've got to figure out a way to streamline the process. And I refer to that sometimes as my 437-day process.
Governor Rendell, any comment?
Well, number one, I agree with a lot of what Congressman Mike has said. He's right. We have to streamline the process. It's absolutely crushing how long it takes. And these environmental reviews, for example, they're necessary, but they don't need to take the amount of time that they're normally given. We've got to up-tempo that process and do it fast. That's number one. Number two, the congressman is right about the need to do creative financing, and he does that in his bill, and we advocate that as well. Number three, I know John Micah very well, and he believes in transportation. And by the way, Diane, just so our listeners are aware, when BAF says we need to spend $200 billion above what we're spending now, that's for all infrastructure, not just transportation.
Right.
But John knows because the Congress asked a special committee, it was called the Congress's Surface Transportation Reform Commission, to look at transportation needs in this country. And they recommended on surface transportation, the overall spending, state, local, and federal, which is about $84 billion a year, be increased to $220 billion a year. And I know if John Micah was king of the world, we would not be cutting the transportation bill by 30%.
Right.
We would be increasing it by 30%.
And Congressman Micah, back to you. You pushed public-private partnerships as a way of boosting spending. Explain to us how that would work.
Well, again, I go back to the term I use, sitting on our assets. We look at some infrastructure that we have, just like Governor Rendell had done in Pennsylvania. Governor Mitch Daniels of Indiana, he took his pay tollway, turned it over to the private sector, got somewhere in the neighborhood of $3.5-4 billion, because they can run it cheaper and better, handle the tolling better. And then he took that money and invested it in infrastructure. Now, I'm not saying we model exactly what he did or how he did it, but there are many, many ways we can take the, the assets that we have, the right-of-way, better utilize them. In fact, we've proposed expanding the nation's interstate for the first time. During my 20 years in Congress, all the money that we've collected is on for maintenance. We've not expanded the capacity, really, of the interstate. And I think we could do that using some innovative public-private partnerships.
But isn't if you introduced more toll roads, for example, isn't that simply another form of taxation?
Absolutely, and it's a user pay as opposed to dipping into general revenues. Right now, the Republican side is and they control the House has said we're only going to spend within the trust fund, because every dollar out of general fund, I heard 44 cents on another program earlier today, but 42 to 43 cents is borrowed as deficit spending. Now, it's better. I don't mind borrowing it, but we can borrow against the asset, have revenue coming in, and pay for the road as people use it. And I think that's a fair way to go, since it's in this atmosphere, it is not only impossible, it's beyond anybody's capability to go out and just raise gas tax. It's just not going to happen. You see the difficulty we have with other finance issues. It's not going to happen today.
Congressman John Mica, Republican of Florida. He's chair of the House Transportation Committee. Thank you so much for joining us.
Can I comment on the last thing?
Sure.
Last thing,
Governor,
that the congressman
Rendell
said?
Go ahead.
Even in the 2010 election, arguably the most conservative anti-spending election of any of our lifetimes, even in that election, 64% of the transportation initiatives that were on the ballot in various states, all of which call for either increased tolling, increased taxes, or increased borrowing, 64% of them were approved by the voters, because the voters, the citizens of this country, know that we've got to invest in infrastructure. They see it. They know when a road is widened from 4 lanes to 8 lanes. They know the difference that it makes in their life. In Charleston, South Carolina, a very red state, voters agreed to raise the sales tax to revitalize the port of Charleston, because they knew that that would bring in jobs and help the Charleston economy.
All right, and let's move on now to Maureen McAvey, who's here in this studio. Maureen, I do wonder about are slipping in terms of infrastructure. The U.S., as Governor Rendell said earlier, was number one, and now we've slipped to 15th. Talk about why.
I think some of the points that we've heard already play into this. At the moment, I think many Americans are simply afraid of the future, and they're afraid of strategically investing. And the Urban Land Institute, like so many other organizations, have argued for several years that we do the infrastructure bank, that we consider our competitive analysis. You can't be a great country without having great infrastructure. And if we look at China is spending $1 trillion over the next 5 years. Brazil is spending $900 billion over the next 3 years. India, $1 trillion. So we call for strategically investing, not just spending, but thinking through where and how we spend the money. And to piggyback on something Governor Rendell said, over the last 10 years, including the last 3 years, we have seen these local initiative referendums pass on average with 70% voter approval. So the voters do understand and are willing to support it when they know where the money will go, how it will be spent, and how it will personally improve their lives.
And Tyler Duvall, I know you are the former undersecretary at the Department of Transportation. Considering what Maureen has just said, we have not passed a highway bill since 2005. Why is that?
So the lack of political consensus, obviously, is a huge problem in getting a bill enacted in the United States. And that political consensus, really lack of it, stems from a lack of policy consensus about what the federal program should be trying to achieve. So there's a wide disagreement, I think a growing consensus, frankly, but still a wide disagreement about what the purpose of federal investment should be, what the objectives should be with those dollars, and what the relative roles of the federal, state, and local government should be. The political stalemate really reflects that lack of consensus today.
Could the lack of investment hurt the economy in ways that we cannot imagine?
Yes, yeah, so there's no question that infrastructure investments drive lots of productivity improvements in the U.S. if done correctly. The multiplier effects have been studied, and they're extremely powerful and high among the top investments you can make. Now, on the flip side, if you make really poor investments and invest in very low-return projects, the benefits of these investments are minimal, which is the key challenge we've got. And both the governor and Congressman Mica referenced the need to invest more intelligently. And I think if you look at the U.S. relative to the rest of the world, the size of our infrastructure networks are the biggest in the world. The quality in terms of physical status is still actually pretty good. What's missing is the speed, the throughput, the time to deliver, and the cost to deliver. We're really falling down on those performance benchmarks, and we really need to emphasize those as we move forward.
Tyler Duvall, he's an infrastructure strategy consultant with McKinsey & Company. You're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Jack Basso, you heard Congressman Mica say no point in trying to go after that gas tax, which is one of the lowest in the world. Do you think it's time to change that thinking?
I think it's clearly time to recognize, since we haven't raised this gas tax rate since 1993.
So it's 18 cents on each
18.4 cents on each gallon at the federal government level. So, yes, I think we at AASHTO clearly think that we need to increase that gas tax, but we need to go beyond that. We're going to need in the long term to be able to develop collection systems that will allow us to recognize there are other objectives that are taking place right now. For example, expanding mileage from fuels. There's a CAFE standards which affect mileage that will affect revenue. So in the short run, it's probably the most efficient thing we could do is raise the gas tax.
To how much?
Oh, take, for example, a program that we laid out would have required about a 10 to 12 cent gas tax increase and would have allowed us to double, for example, a highway and transit programs from around $43 billion up to $73 billion, and the transit programs to $18
billion. And what's the argument against that? I've heard that raising the gas tax is second only to the estate tax in terms of how people feel so strongly.
I think there are two or three arguments. The first is, do we invest effectively? You mentioned earmarks earlier. That was, when I mentioned the disaster, it's what people perceive the program to be, which it's not. That's problem number one. Problem number two is we've got to translate a national program, national investment, into local and state specific investments and projects. That's what moves people forward when they see something they really believe needs to be done, clear terms. It's a job we have to do. I think the third thing is there's a mood right now, obviously. Any tax is an evil thing, and consequently, this one, even though it's a user fee, falls into that category. So we've got a real problem with this thing.
I'd like to understand whether there are some areas of the country that are clearly more in need of infrastructure upgrading than others, Tyler Duvall?
Yeah, so that's a great question. The country is so diverse in terms of what it needs. And if you look at the upper Northeast and upper Midwest, you have aging systems, populations not growing dramatically, but huge need to recapitalize. So the infrastructure strategy for the Northeast and upper Midwest should look a bit different, should be about optimizing existing systems much more efficiently through technology and recapitalizing the existing asset base. If you look at the demographic changes in the Southeast and the Southwest, you've got relatively fast-growing populations, so the need for new capacity tends to outstretch that. And I think that's one of the challenges. Coming up with a unified national strategy, given how diverse the state and local systems are, is a huge challenge.
Is it going to take more bridge collapses like that we saw in Minneapolis before the Congress gets around to doing something? What's your view, Jack?
Well, mine, Diane, is this, that when that bridge collapsed, I guess in my personal mind, having been doing this most of my life, was this is going to be the moment when the wake-up call came. What I found to be the case was it lasted about 2 days and then dissipated.
Jack Bazo. He's with the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials. Short break. Your calls when we come back.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University and by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at GatesFoundation.org. By the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. And by the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for expanding learning opportunities beyond the school day, at wallacefoundation.org. This is NPR.
A novelist examines World War II from the perspective of the women left behind. It's a story about war, love, and scars that never go away. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Welcome back. We are talking about the country's infrastructure. In some areas, it's truly critical. Bridges, highways, passes, overpasses, all of it needs careful review and much investment. Let's open the phones. We'll go first to Plantation, Florida. Good morning, Dennis. You're on the air.
Good morning, Diane. I just wanted to call and thank you for this program, because finally somebody has taken this seriously and taken us seriously. I just think the government needs to be a cheerleader with these initiatives by stubbornly focusing and streamlining the message. Also, the media needs to find the sexy in this issue and stay on it like white on rice.
All right. Thanks for calling. Maureen.
One of the things that we have to appreciate is how important this is to each and every one of us, that currently congestion costs between $800 and $1,000 per person per year. When we look at the quality of our infrastructure, we're really jeopardizing the quality of life for the future, for every citizen, for our children, our grandchildren. If we don't do this and do it well, we will have to play catch-up football, and it's an expensive proposition.
And to Houston, Texas. Good morning, Boyd. You're on the air.
Hi, Diane. Thank you. With the Tea Party basically controlling the debate here on the debt ceiling and the budget, I think that we need to point out how insane some of these policies are. For example, Michelle Bachmann saying that we do not need to raise the debt ceiling, we don't need to raise taxes, and yet somehow, even though 40% of our money that we spend is borrowed, we could make ends meet. That's insane, and I think we really need to point that out in order to move ahead.
Governor Rendell.
Well, I think there's good news on that horizon, and that is that infrastructure tends to cut across partisan lines. For example, two very conservative senators, Tom Coburn and Jim Inhofe, are strong advocates of spending money on infrastructure. And look, we've got to build a coalition in Washington that says, yes, we're going to get rid of this deficit. We're going to do it in a fair and balanced way. But at the same time, we're going to invest in things that are important to the country. And talk about the gas tax, and I don't believe we should try to raise the gas tax now with the economy where it is. But Americans pay the lowest gas tax of any of the 17 most developed nations, the lowest. We pay the lowest for overall price at the pump by far among those 17 nations. And a BAF poll found that 60% of Americans think that the gas tax goes up adjusted to inflation every year. That's not true. X says it hasn't been raised since 1993. So when the economy recovers, we've got to raise the gas tax, raise fees on our use of our barges, canals, our locks and levees, raise a lot of things to produce the necessary money to invest, because we'll get that money back. We'll get it back in the jobs created, in the money invested. We'll get it back in economic efficiency. Do you know, Diane, that the U.S. and Australia produce metallurgical coal? China desperately wants as much metallurgical coal as they can get because it's the feedstock for coke plants. Well, in Australia, they can get it from where it's mined to their ports one quarter as cheaply as it costs us in America. Mm. So the Chinese buy Australian coal first and come to us secondly.
Jack Basso, on that gasoline tax, compare what we in this country pay in the way of gas taxes and what Europeans pay.
Yes, in Europe, and I should start there, there is a general fund tax that covers paying for infrastructure and other things, unlike what we do here where we have a dedicated gas tax. But the rates in Europe can be as high as $7 to $8 a gallon.
A gallon.
A gallon, or the equivalent in liters of what they have over there. So our rate is minuscule. The other thing I'd mention here is, what does the average American pay the federal government who drives 12,000 miles a year? I get interesting answers to this, but it's about $110 a year for the whole investment we make. It's kind of, I get answers like thousands of dollars, and I'm often shocked by that.
Exactly. Let's
on
go.
On page 30 of this report, the BAF report, which is available online at Building America's Future, there's a great chart showing U.S. gas tax and U.S. cost of gas compared to the rest of the world.
Which is why a great many of us, and I include myself, Governor, feel that gas taxes should go up. Let's go to John in Miami, Florida. You're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to comment on something about how this money has been spent in the past. Right now, there's a project in Miami, Florida, where they're spending $4.5 million just to put a little bridge over one lane of an expressway to extend the bicycle and pedestrian walkway path along a major highway here in Miami, Florida. And I think this is just an example of the waste that goes on with these kinds of dollars. And if you expect the American people to want to spend more money on this, you're going to have to show them that there's a need for projects, and they're not just going to spend $4.5 million just so some bicyclists can go on a little bridge over one lane of an expressway when there's actually a sidewalk where they could ride their bikes right on the opposite
side
of the road.
All right, Terry, thanks for calling. Tyler.
Yeah, so I'm not going to comment, obviously, on that specific project. But, I mean, there's little question that the process that we're using in the United States to allocate these huge amounts of capital resources is not, let's say, best practices. If you look at leading governments and private entities around the globe, they use extremely disciplined processes using metrics, as I said, rate of return metrics to allocate these resources. If you look at the railroad sector, the telecommunications sector, electricity, all comparable networks, the discipline associated with making these investment decisions is simply higher. And that doesn't mean it needs to take longer. It just means we need to use these best practices into the public sector more.
Jack.
Yes. And again, I wouldn't comment on that project because I don't know. But I do think Mr. Micah, and also I think the Senate committees that are involved, will be looking at this question of what are the fundamental core priorities. And bike lanes come into play. There are people that clearly appreciate that. But again, our underinvestment is so dramatic that we have really got to focus like a laser beam on the core things we need to do.
All right, to Charlotte, North Carolina. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Diane, and thank you so much for having the show. First of all, I want to congratulate people like Governor Rendell, reasonable politicians who are looking at the future of America and not looking at their own self-interest. For instance, the FAA project that was just recently, or projects that were delayed, was really because of Representative Micah. This was a project. I'm an ex-air traffic controller. These are projects that were for control towers, runways, navigation equipment that were paid for in 2004, and because of his bickering, he put them on hold. We don't need leaders like that. I'm sorry. That's just not acceptable. And the roads, construction projects, get our people to work. We need to get them to work. It's going to be good for them. It's going to be good for us and raise our standing around the world. So thank you so much for having this show.
My pleasure. Maureen.
One of the things that I think all of us are starting to appreciate is we need appropriate consensus building and we need to pay attention to facts. You know, there's that old line of facts are stubborn things. And as we look at investing in infrastructure, we need to, I think each one of us, as Tyler said, as Governor Rendell said, even Representative Micah, we need to think through how we use discipline, how we gather facts, and make appropriate decisions. 80% of our gross domestic product comes from cities and suburbs. And if we can reduce congestion, if we can figure out how we appropriately build some density and some appropriate transit, including some bikes and some pedestrians at the moment in some of the cities, we see 14% of people commuting actually walk or bicycle to get to their jobs. So we need an entire system of transportation from airports, ports, bikeways, walking, transportation, and roads.
And Governor Rendell, President Obama offered $10 billion in funding to three states to kickstart a high-speed rail initiative. Why did that go down the drain? Why did those governors in Florida, Ohio, and Wisconsin turn it down?
Well, they don't believe that it's a good expenditure of the state funds that would be necessary to match the federal allocation. And that's their judgment. And look, President Obama said he'd like to bring high-speed rail service to 80% of the American population. That's too ambitious a goal. There are places in America where high-speed rail won't work because there's just not enough potential ridership. But there are places where it would be an incredible plus and reduce the burden on both vehicular traffic and air traffic. And that would be in California between Los Angeles and San Francisco, in Chicago as a spoke to the Midwestern cities, and certainly in Boston to Washington. The Acela has proved that you can make money on a train line, an effective train line there. And if we had real high speed, it could even be better. So I think we should concentrate on those three areas, pour all of our money into those, and demonstrate that high-speed rail can work here as it's worked all over the country. And interestingly, Diane, the caller, a former air traffic controller, one of our biggest problems, because we don't have enough money to spend on infrastructure, is getting what's called the next-gen or the next generation air traffic control system, a system that's based not just on radar and ground control, but more on GPS and high technology. That system would cut air delays dramatically and save us a whole boatload of money, plus make the system safer. But we just simply don't have the money to adopt it, even though it's been adopted by European and Asian countries right and left.
Taylor Duvall, one begins to wonder whether Congress is the best place to be making these decisions about overall transportation needs throughout the country, about repairing bridges, roads, airports. What is your thinking?
I'm not in the political business anymore, but my sense is that obviously Congress can do a lot to provide the framework that will unleash a lot of innovation in the sector right now. Whether we talk about more resources or not, there's a huge amount underneath the resource question that can be done to basically incentivize technologies to be introduced, to look at urban congestion, which is a huge and growing problem, huge environmental effects of that. And if they could provide a very clear framework to go after some of these problems, whether or not they add additional resources, I think they would that would add a lot of value.
Let's take a call in Dallas, Texas. Good morning, Travis.
Good morning, Diane. We've been talking a lot on your show, it seems like, about competitiveness in our infrastructure. But another area I feel that we could possibly transfer that dialogue would be in the education dialogue as well. Getting more people interested in math and sciences to be able to help us complete investment infrastructure programs for the next generation of engineers.
Good comment, Maureen.
I certainly agree with Travis. We need to think through how we educate our citizens and become competitive internationally. When you realize that in India, for example, they're graduating 600,000 engineers, many of which we import, if you will, into this country because we are not educating as many engineers of all types, civil, mechanical, electrical, etc., as we need. We need to improve our education systems as well.
Maureen McAvey, she is with the Urban Land Institute, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Caller here in Washington, D.C. Sydney, you're on the air.
Hi. I would like to discuss why, here in the D.C. area on 495, we're doing a lot of hot lanes and metro and construction like that. But from what I understand, it's been contracted out to a company from Australia.
So you're concerned about that, Maureen?
Well, at this point, we are not seeing our own American countries or companies as competitive as we would like them to be. And we're seeing companies like Macquarie, like Cintas, getting some of the contracts that ideally our companies would be doing here internally.
Tyler.
Yeah, that project actually is a U.S. construction entity floor. The financing arm is a toll road operator based out of Australia, so the caller's correct about that. But huge number of U.S. construction jobs are being created by that contract.
Jack Bezos.
And that project will make a huge difference in the traffic flows on the Capital Beltway, and I think of the Australian Bank as being a source of capital. We have firms in the U.S., if they choose and can compete, to do the same thing. So I think, you know, it's a good use of PPPs.
And if we can do more of these projects, at this point we're sending some of the money that the large pension funds and insurance companies collect in this country, we're sending a lot of that money overseas because Europe and Australia, China are able to do these P3 projects, these PPP projects, and we haven't been able to get sufficient local approvals for them.
One last quick question for you, Governor Rendell. When you were governor of Pennsylvania, I gather you invested heavily in bridge repair and maintenance, but by the end of your term, they were in worse condition. What do you think went wrong?
Well, that's actually not true, Diane. When I took over, we had 6,000 structurally deficient bridges. When I left office, we were down to 5,200, and we were actually doing work on 1,700 bridges as I left office. And the good news is that that work not only was repairing Pennsylvania bridges, not as rapidly as any of us would have liked, but it was one of the reasons that Pennsylvania has an unemployment rate of 7.5%, almost 2% lower than the national average and the lowest of any large industrial state, because when you invest in infrastructure, you create those jobs, no question about it. And Diane, one last answer to your question of why there isn't public confidence, because Congress has abused that funding responsibility in the past with the earmarks, which is why we need an infrastructure bank to make decisions on funding big, large regional projects based on merit.
Who would be on that infrastructure bank?
Well, it would be a combination of people appointed, some by the Congress, some by the president, but they would have to be professionals. They wouldn't be elected officials. They wouldn't be anybody interested in running for office. They'd be former state DOT secretaries. They'd be financial people. They'd be a whole conglomerate, business people. And we need to do that. The infrastructure bank, at the very least, is something we should get done in the next couple of months.
We'll have to leave it at that. Thank you, Governor Ed Rendell, former governor of Pennsylvania. He's co-chair of Building America's Future. Tyler Duvall is a strategist with McKinsey and Company. Jack Basso is with the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials. Maureen McAvey is with the Urban Land Institute. Let's hope something starts getting done. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.